You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of September 20th, 2016, and episode number 282. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, I made it back alive from the great land known as Alaska. I was on vacation last week, in case you missed me. I don't know. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. I missed you guys. I was out traveling the world, the Pacific Northwest, Pacific Ocean. Oh, it was a great time. We'll talk more about that here in a second. What's going on here tonight on the news? Well, we have a big cat in Ohio. Or do we? Well, we do, actually. The Loch Ness Monster photographed again. Again. And the return of the Thylacine, part two. Another video released. And a little math here for you. Two triangles plus one helicopter equals one interesting story. We'll talk about MUFON looking to upgrade and a humanoid creature in Peru. Maybe or maybe not. I don't know. We'll have the book of the week as well. And we'll see what else, what other kind of havoc we can create here tonight. Back off of a week. It seems like a month. I haven't been on here a month, it feels like. But it's only been a week. September, the 6th. So I missed last week. And here we are on the 20th. And really didn't pay too much attention to all the news while I was gone. A little spotty on the cell phone signal in and out, even though I was in Alaska. So we did have some U.S. cities, but we're also very close to Canada. And I don't mind roaming up to Canada, but not roaming on my cell phone bill. So didn't really pay too much attention to too much of the news. Had time to screw around on Facebook, as always. You know, that's important. We would all die without Facebook. So I had to jump on there. I did a little live video. I'd never done that before. Did a little live video. I think from, Skagway. I think it was Ketchikan, actually. I did a little live video there. It was fun. But mostly just paid attention to my vacation. Spent a little money, so I kind of got to pay attention. Anyway, this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Today. Now. Well, not now. Wait till the show's done. Write that down and then check it out when we're done. Metaphysicsinstitute.org. A lot of great classes. That's where I got my degrees, including the fifth degree. No, I didn't get the fifth degree. Anyway, what's going on this week? Well, yes, I'm back from vacation. And as I mentioned, I was in the Pacific Northwest. I flew out to Seattle. And then we jumped on board a cruise ship and cruised past Vancouver Island, and then around Vancouver Island, and then up through the Inside Passage into Alaska, Skagway. Well, I guess it was Ketchikan, Juneau, then Skagway, and then headed back down south to Victoria, British Columbia. And you know, anytime you go on vacation, I always do research. So I know where I'm going and what's going on in those places. And you always look for the big hot spots of where to visit while you're on vacation. And maybe, you know, if you're like me, you kind of look into a little bit of the paranormal history. And since I'm into everything, not just ghosts. I look at everything. So I always take all that into consideration whenever I'm flying out there, anywhere in the Pacific Northwest, or really anywhere, Florida or anywhere. I'm always looking at the local folklore, the local history of anything paranormal. You know, it doesn't matter where you're going, where you're traveling. You don't have to travel somewhere extravagant. But, you know, just to know where you're going and look up the haunted history. It's fun. It's neat. Even if you don't get time to visit these places, at least you could say you were there. Or you were near that area or whatever. So flying in, we flew into, like I said, Seattle. So you have Mount Rainier right there. Mount Rainier is a volcano. Huge volcano, stratovolcano. It's actually one of the most deadliest volcanoes on the planet, believe it or not. It's considered dangerous because its proximity to Seattle. It's 54 miles south of Seattle, and it's covered with snow and ice. So that would be a very big deal if that were to erupt with all that snow and ice thrown into the air and come down to that area. It would be a river of dirt and ice, not a good situation. That's why I plan on moving a little further north of Seattle than in that area, but we'll see how that ever pans out. Now, you usually see this. If you've ever seen a picture of Seattle, you usually see Mount Rainier. It's usually on the right-hand side. You've got the little tower there, then you've got the city, then you've got Mount Rainier on the right-hand side. And flying saucers, this was the birthplace of flying saucers. Kenneth Arnold purportedly saw 9 unidentified flying objects on June 24, 1947, which upon his description of the objects, the press, yes, imagine that, the press made up their own term, flying saucer and flying disc, even though the objects he saw were described as crescent-shaped. Well, imagine that, the press getting something wrong. But I didn't see any UFOs. We did fly into SeaTac Airport. Kept a close eye on Mount Rainier. It was kind of covered in clouds on the way out there. It cleared up as we got on the cruise ship and headed out. Kept my camera pointed in that direction, but didn't see anything strange. Probably more strange people on the ship than there was strange things in the sky. Now, I also was near the Red Onion Saloon in Skagway, which is a former brothel. I'm sure there's a lot of imprinted history and there in different various ways, more than likely. Been there before. This is we're actually celebrating our 10-year anniversary, my wife and I. We went here on our honeymoon, so we wanted to go back. I wanted to go back. I'm sure she wanted to go back. I'm sure she doesn't mind going back to Alaska. A little different itinerary, but we've been to Skagway, Juneau, and Ketchikan before, and went into the Red Onion Saloon. It was really nothing all that spectacular, just basically a kind of a tourist trap, more or less. And it's just too loud and too much going on to really listen for anything or watch for anything in there. Sometimes that's a good thing, though, when people are distracted and things happen. If you're paying attention, sometimes you'll notice things happen. But it's just too busy in there. Did walk by it a few times. The Alaskan Hotel in Juneau is supposedly one of the, if not the most haunted place in Alaska. Drove by that on a bus, didn't get a chance to get out and see it. But I did get to visit the Gold Rush Cemetery that is supposedly haunted as well. Lots of voices and different things following me around up there. But it's in a stretch of area where it's kind of a valley, and the wind just kind of comes through there pretty heavy. And the Yukon, I forget the name of it, Yukon Railroad goes through there as well. The train tracks are literally right on the other side of the road. So it's about 20 feet away. So the train goes through there about every 45 minutes. So really hard to do any sort of investigation. But I was there with a couple busloads of people, probably 3 busloads of people, all creeping around in the cemetery. Kind of weird to go visit a cemetery on a tour. But a lot of history there, a lot of very old graves, a lot of people buried there that had a lot to do with the city of Skagway. But like I said, far too many tourists to really hear anything, footsteps or anything. I would love to hike the old Klondike Trail. It starts right there. It's the Chilkoot Trail. It starts right there. Really wanted to just run away and climb through the mountains and never come back. They have So like a living history museum. It's the longest museum in the world. And it's the trail is littered with debris from the gold rush era. All kinds of equipment that was hauled up there that just got left up there. And it's basically protected. There's a few museums actually on the trail as you go through. So love to go back and hike that. It would be a lot of fun. That's the Yukon Territory. So where we are at, we're literally 15 miles away from Yukon Territory up in Canada. So it's pretty cool. And then on the way back, we went to, like I said, Victoria, British Columbia on Vancouver Island. And on Vancouver Island, on the north, well, I guess it would be the east edge. Vancouver Island is a long, thin island that's kind of runs northwest to southeast. So on the southeast end, there's this little bay called Cadboro Bay. And if that kind of sounds familiar, it's the reasoning for the name of the word Cadborosaurus, which is a cryptid, a water-based cryptid that is not really a dinosaur. People think Cadborosaurus is a specific type of creature. It's just kind of a made-up name, actually, like the Loch Ness Monster. And those original sightings were in that area that we were at on Vancouver Island. So kept my eye out for that. I saw a lot of seals in the water, but no caddy. No caddy. And while I was up there, Juneau and Skagway in that area is what's called the Alaskan Triangle, which essentially goes from Juneau west to Anchorage and then north to Barrow, Alaska, which is all the way at the top of Alaska, way, way up there, probably about 1,500 miles away. Now, since 1988, there have been 16,000 people reported missing in that little triangular area. Well, it's not little, it's huge. That's a lot of people. And Alaska, if you've listened to the Paranormal News Insider, you know on my monthly MUFON reports, thank you, Audrey, that Alaska does not have that large of a population. I think they're dead last, number 50. That's it. So 16,000 people, that's a lot. Granted, there are probably more or less tourists. And some people actually just go there to escape. Some people just go there to disappear anyway. So maybe a lot of that's maybe done on purpose. But it's an unforgiving land. It's when you get out there and you see it, you realize how remote places are. Even where I was at, which is a tourist area, you can see how remote this land can be and how if you do misstep or if you do get lost and you do get turned around, you could be out there a long time and you may never get back. Sounds like fun though. But what did I see? Well, I did see Sasquatch. Yes, I did see Sasquatch on Friday. I think it was in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock on Vancouver Island. As I got off the ship, he greeted me as I got off the Norwegian Jewel. And we got our picture together. If you've seen my Facebook profile, my personal one, mine, not Paranormal News Insider, but just mine, Brian Parsons, I got my picture there with Sasquatch. It was cool, unexpected. And all I asked him for was a picture that was not blurry. And it came out. It was great. It was a lot of fun. So if you've ever been to Washington, the whole state really plays in on the Sasquatch and Bigfoot related items. They're everywhere. The SeaTac Airport has a lot of gift shops. Most of it right now is all geared towards the Seahawks, but there's a lot of Bigfoot stuff in there. So if you ever get out there, it's really interesting. This is like my fourth time in that area. It's beautiful, and Alaska was awesome, as always. My second trip there. So that's that trip, and glad to be back. I got a lot of stuff coming up. October 27th, that's coming up awful fast. It's just over a month away. I guess I better get my presentation going. It's going to be a ghost presentation October 27th at Westerville Public Library, my eighth consecutive year down there. And it's going to be a ghost themed. I'm going to have, I don't like using the term evidence because it's more or less just data, but people want to see what I've collected, what I've done. Really can't brag about stuff because it's not really what I think it is, but I'll let the crowd decide. I'll show off some pictures and play some EVP for people and let them interpret that. I'll play some genuine stuff that I think is legitimate, and I'll also play some stuff that I know what the solution is, and let, just kind of let people know what's going on. Again, October 27th, Westerville Public Library. That's just northeast of Columbus, Ohio. And then, I got one in November here too. I think I have one in between, but I can't remember what it is. It's not on my list, so I don't know. Maybe I won't show up. I don't know. Ghost Excavation Conference, November 4th through the 6th in Bedford, Pennsylvania. That's going to be a really fun event. There's a lot of sharp-minded people that are going to be there. And this isn't just about bragging about locations of ghost investigations and pictures of orbs and stuff like that. This is actually people who are out there in the field doing work, trying to figure out a good way to investigate ghosts. A lot of great people are going to be there. Brandon Masullo is going to be talking about the ingredients for a ghostly experience. Jonathan Williams, who's has an extensive law enforcement forensics background, will also be speaking. He's extremely knowledgeable. Love to hear his presentations. And author Patty Wilson will also be at that event. And you can check out all these, anything I'm talking about. It's all on paranewsinsider.com. And a big announcement, when I got back late Sunday or late Saturday, early Sunday morning, a little tired. But there was a big announcement on Sunday night. Tickets went on sale. I guess that was Sunday night, Monday morning at midnight. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, May 5th through the 7th next year, 2017, in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, and myself are returning. Jay Bechuchin and Eric Altman, who was the host last year, he'll be speaking this year as well. There's a lot of special guests that have been announced or will be announced. There's a couple I think he's holding off until this fall. But Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters will be back. He was there this year and he had a huge line. I was just standing there watching this huge line. And I think we all were just standing there in awe. Like, this guy really packs the people in. Very personable guy. Very nice guy. Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters. Now, tickets did go on sale Monday morning, September 19th. So get in there. Get in there and get your tickets now. If you're interested, it's going to sell out fast. And it's very limited number of people that I think they're going to let in on that. But the campgrounds have not gone on sale yet. That's not going to be until this fall. I got to get my camping site set aside and other events going on next year. I'm not going to talk about those. Let's get into the news here. I got a little update on Wessie. I haven't talked about him in 2 weeks. Kept an eye on that story. I have several news alerts lined up for Wessie out of Westbrook, Maine. If you don't know anything about this, you've not been paying attention to the show, obviously. Huge snake seen by two police officers after hearing some stories about a large snake. Now, somebody said it had the head the size of a soccer ball. That's huge. That was in mid-June. And then at the end of June, two police officers saw what they thought was a huge snake eating a beaver. I'm not making that up. That's what they said. Eating a beaver. Yummy. Yeah. So they saw that really late at night, early in the morning, like 2 a.m. or something like that. Then there has not really been any notable sightings since then. But the skin was found a couple of weeks later, and that caused a huge media sensation. And since then, there's been hundreds of T-shirts sold, a beer brewed, all kinds of big activities going on up there in Westbrook, Maine. And they kind of got in trouble. They did a little promo video for the city with a snake kind of, you know, blacked out in the background. And, you know, when they do those videos where the person's is like their identity is kind of covered up and they have that deep voice. Well, they did that too. And it was kind of funny. I thought it was funny. Some people were a little upset about that because there could be an anaconda loose in the water. They did have a triathlon on September 10th. I was kind of watching that to see if there was any kind of sightings attributed to that, with a lot of people in the water swimming through the river there, but Presum Scott River, but nothing, no sightings. So I was thinking that that would churn up the water a little bit and turn this guy loose, get him out of hiding. I'm sure he's a little lethargic with the temperatures dropping this time of the year. So we may not ever hear anything from Wesley going forward. And before I came on the air, I forgot about the story. It's just so much I forgot about in a week. It's funny because usually when I go on vacation, I know this sounds bad, but somebody always dies. It's usually like a big death. Last time we went on vacation, we went on a cruise in April, and that's when Prince died. I forget, somebody died the year before that we were on vacation. So it's kind of on alert, like who's going to die this time? Nobody died. That's good. Well, I'm sure people died, but nobody famous, nobody big. But the clowns were all over the news for the last couple of weeks. It's gotten out of control. First, it started out a little story, I think down in North Carolina or South Carolina, one of those. It's kind of all the same thing. They had some scary sightings, and it just kind of was a joke. And then it just kind of got out of control. And now it's like it's huge rash. It's all over the United States. But I was reading something interesting about the clown sightings. There was a huge rash of sightings in the United Kingdom in 2013 and 2014, all over the place. And one story that cropped up here is out of Washington, D.C., out of Annapolis, there was a couple of kids that said that they saw people walking around wearing face paint and clown costumes. And I think it was just a few days ago, September 15th, but it just came out today that they actually made up the story. They made it up. They made it up. Thanks a lot, kids. So they got a lot of people all wound up for nothing. How many of these are made up? I don't know. Either way, it's still kind of spooky. I'm not afraid of clowns. I just think it's creepy no matter what they're doing. I think it's a little creepy. Cryptid news. Let's jump into cryptid news here. This is a story that kind of popped up when I was going out, leaving on vacation. An interesting story. September 10th, it was Saturday, a video of a mysterious cat got a central Ohio city on high alert. And that was back on September 6th. The short cell phone video had been filmed over the prior weekend and showed a goldish-looking cat prowling around Powell, Ohio. A little spooky, a scary. When I saw the video, I was on my phone, and I forget where I was at. It was kind of hard to see it, but looking at it, I was like, that's not a mountain lion. I don't think so. It just didn't quite look like it. If you've ever seen a mountain lion and got to watch it, the body language, they are just like overgrown cats. They just look like a regular, they act like a regular house cat, but they don't look like it. Just the streamlined head, the really super long tail. This did not look like that. And again, it was hard to see on a cell phone, watching a video. Now, Powell, Ohio is located about 14 miles north of the state capital of Columbus, Ohio, which is in central Ohio. Now, authorities contacted the Columbus Zoo, which is a very good first step in any type of case like this, which stated that they were not missing any animals. Now, that really doesn't mean much because, the laws are a lot stricter now. But a few years ago, there was outside of Columbus, east of Columbus, there was a gentleman who led a whole bunch of exotic animals out, including mountain lions, bears, actual African lions out of their enclosure. And he killed himself and let these animals run loose. And unfortunately, they had to put all these animals down. But that was as bad as that incident was. It was actually good because it created the laws that we have in place finally here in Ohio. Still a little bit of a gray area, but it's scary if you were to see some of the enclosures that are here in Ohio of some of these really exotic animals that could get out and do a lot of damage. And I think are making up a lot of these cryptid stories all over the United States, maybe even all over the world, because people just feel like they need to own these exotic pets. Not to get too far off on the tangent there. So that's always in the back of my mind whenever I hear a story about a cougar on the loose, because yes, I do feel very strongly that mountain lions are moving their way from the the west toward the east. And, you know, there is, I'm holding out on the possibility that the eastern cougar is not extinct and it's still alive. But I always think, first thing, escape captive, especially one that's just lurking around somebody's backyard, because that's not how they act. And it was interesting as reading the story, somebody else said this as well. Doug Warmoltz, vice president of animal care at the zoo, the Columbus Zoo, told ABC 6 out of Columbus, Ohio, it was likely not a cougar. As he said, quote, a cat like a cougar is an ambush predator. They are secretive by nature, so it would be unusual, in my estimation, if that's what it is, to see it wandering around out in the open like that, unquote. And I agree. But sometimes a captive mountain lion or cougar will, they get a little stir crazy when they're locked in a cage. So when they get out, they don't really know how to act for a little while. And they do kind of stick to a little area because they're not used to being able to wander. And it's been notated, I've read a lot of this, of these same scenarios where they're out in the open and they're kind of disoriented. And some of them can't kill like they normally would because they've been declawed or their teeth are just out of disrepair or broken. So they have a little hard time adjusting to being out in the wild, but it's an ambush predator. It's kind of hard to cover that up. But no threatening behavior was displayed by the animal, which is a good sign. But police did warn residents to be on the lookout nonetheless. Now, State Wildlife Officer Maurice Irish went to the scene and measured the electrical box. If you see the video, there's like this little box to the right. That's an electrical box that was seen in the video. He estimated the cat to be around 3 feet long. 3 feet long. Well, that sounds impressive, but a mountain lion would be double that. Be about 5 to 6 feet in length, not including the tail. And Irish also revealed that he had received a voicemail from a woman who had lost her cat back in June. Now, I know what you're thinking. No, the cat, this mountain lion didn't eat the cat. She thinks that's her cat in the video. She recognized it. She says it matches her 20-pound tabby cat that's been missing since June. So they've pretty much closed the case. I've not gotten I've sent out a couple of emails, got no response about the follow-up for the cat. But I'm pretty sure that the missing tabby cat was this big cat that was filmed. It does look like a house cat, fat house cat, but does not look like a mountain lion. But it created a little bit of, havoc there in this community. It's kind of a well-to-do neighborhood, and they tend to panic sometimes over things like that. But yeah, pretty sure that was just a missing house cat. I know that's sad. So the Loch Ness Monster, I mentioned this at the beginning, teaser at the beginning of the show. Got to do that. Keep you guys captivated here. The Loch Ness Monster has been photographed, and this time it's real and it's clear. It's a clear photograph of the Loch Ness Monster, and it's definitely alive, and it's definitely in the water. But it's not what you're thinking. Yes, it's not what you're thinking. Now, I would say that the photograph is definitely not tampered with, definitely not photoshopped, but is it really the Loch Ness Monster? Ian Bremmer, a 58-year-old, caught what he thinks could be the Loch Ness Monster in a photograph while driving around the loch. He's an amateur photographer. I guess we're all amateur photographers. Anybody with a camera or a cell phone, you're automatically a amateur photographer. I don't know why they bother to say that. The photograph shows a creature in the water with three humps, and a definitive head sticking out of the water. Now, Bremmer said he was looking for red deer and taking pictures of the loch at the same time. And this is the part that I always have a hard time believing here. He says he never saw the creature until he was looking through his photographs while at home. Both The Sun and Cryptomundo, who posted about the story, both suggest that this could possibly be three seals that are merely swimming in succession. Now, again, I was in case you forgot, I was on vacation and I was out in the ocean and I saw plenty of seals, lots of seals, harbor seals. Did see some stellar sea lions, which are a lot bigger. And I kind of laughed because first thing when I saw this picture, I instantly thought of seals. And I'd actually seen them that same day acting the same way. Two of them were together and one was behind the other. And they were just kind of swimming through the water. And when they kind of panic or they want to move fast, they do kind of break out of the water there and move like that. So that's a very logical solution. And for maybe some people that just guessed at that because they've seen pictures, I've heard of that, I actually saw the same thing. So that solidified my belief in that instantaneously. And I previously mentioned that the Cadborosaurus that I was in that same area on just Friday, that supposedly lurks in the waters of the Pacific Northwest. Now, one incident in 1943, there were two police officers who purportedly saw this creature, the Cadborosaurus. But then one of them picked up a pair of binoculars and looked through them and realized it was a bull sea lion leading other sea lions through the water. So police are trained observers, yes, but even they can misinterpret things and see things that they want to see because they see them. Yes, they do, and they can. We're all susceptible to that. And in case you're wondering, just want to let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, who is suffering from jet lag still 2 days later. Yes. Okay, cryptid news. And yeah, poor old Loch Ness Monster. Well, it's a cool photograph if you've seen it. If you haven't seen it, let's see. I'll throw a link there in the chat room. And if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on some of these links that I'm showing that are not the ones that you're going to find on the popular paranormal shows or paranormal websites out there like Anomalist, Unexplained Mysteries. They tend to put up their own links. They create their own stories sometimes, or they just pick one and throw it out there. And I do the research. I try to find the original source, one of the original stories that are out there to make sure that I'm getting the right information. I kind of correlate all these stories and look for different things that are being talked about this, so I can make sure that I get you guys the right information, the correct information, and not just opinions. So some of my links are a little bit different. So if you're in the chat room, that's a little perk other than getting picked on by Dita in the chat room constantly. She's a bully. She's the bully. No, but she keeps everybody in line. Thylacine. Now, yes, I missed last week, but the week before, we got to talk about this video that popped up about this thylacine, and it's pretty interesting. I don't live in Australia, never even been to Australia, but I feel strongly that the thylacine is one animal that has a very high potential of being rediscovered. It's not really the kind of animal that you would think would be rediscovered, but I have a hope and I have a belief that the thylacine can possibly exist out there. But I'm a little skeptical of these videos. And the Thylacine Awareness Group is the group behind the first sighting, or the first video, I should say. And now they've released a second video just a couple of days ago of a purported thylacine sighting. The first video was released, like I said, a couple weeks ago. And I did talk about it on the September 6th episode of the Paranormal News Insider. In that video, we saw a quick glimpse of a creature. It could be a thylacine, but there really wasn't enough footage to really tell. It was kind of grainy. It was kind of shaky. You got to take Dramamine just to watch that, but it was kind of all over the place. But this new video shows a creature walking, running, and hopping through a field although it kind of appears to be injured. But the tail and overall body structure could pass for a thylacine. It doesn't look exact. The major problem with the sighting is that it's what's called a mainland sighting. And that essentially means that it's from Australia and not Tasmania, where the creature was known to exist until the last known living thylacine, or sometimes referred to as a Tasmanian tiger, died in 1936 at the Hobart Zoo in Tasmania. So they were seen quite a bit in Tasmania up until they disappeared. And the thylacine was thought to have died out on mainland Australia about 2,000 years ago. That's a long time. And it puts a pretty big damper on this video, which could be, I think it's probably a dingo or some other creature that's has mange. So basically, it's lost the hair on its tail. So it kind of changes the body structure a little bit. It changes your perspective when you're seeing this with no hair on the tail. It makes it look like a different type of creature. And I hate to think that maybe they took somebody took a fox and cut the tail off, or not cut the tail, but all the hair off, and maybe shot this video, or maybe they did misinterpret a dingo or a fox. The rear legs, this is the big debate about this video. Everyone's talking about the legs. The rear legs of the creature don't seem to match the heel height of known photographs of the thylacine. And it's much higher. It's similar to dogs. And it looks pretty much like a fox or even a dingo. Now, the video is zoomed up and it's pretty pixelated. It's not the greatest. It does show quite a bit of this animal moving around, like I said, jumping and hopping and all this. The other problem is that it was filmed in 2008, and there's been no video of this purported creature, or no sightings, really, that I've heard of since then. Now, maybe they're holding out. Maybe they do have more videos. They say they have a whole bunch. So maybe this particular one they do have more footage of, and they've just not said anything. Now, my thought is, again, possibly red fox, possibly dingo with mange, which is why the tail is not bushy. It does look very, if you've ever seen a thylacine picture, they have that very solid tail. It looks pretty close. But again, if you look at the bone structure of some of these animals, they also kind of look like that. It's just the fur of the thylacine looked a little different. And thylacine is a marsupial. It's not even dog anyway, or canid. So they would look a little different anyway, but just to me, it's not overwhelmingly convincing. At first sight, I was kind of blown away, like, wow, this is good. This is it. But then the more I watched it, the more I watched the body language and the behavior of the animal, and kind of slowed it down and looked, I'm not convinced as much. It would be great though. Like I said, this is one of the creatures that I think really has a possibility of being taken off the extinction list. Well, that is until it's reported, and then people go out there and probably hunt it or put it in a zoo or something like that. But I definitely think that it's possible. But these videos, so far, I'm not convinced. Not convinced. Now, the red fox was introduced to Australia in the early and mid-1800s for the purpose of fox hunting. Yet it's exploded in population and range since then. I do think that they also have another fox that lives on Australia. They kind of run rampant. There's really no competition other than people. We like to hunt those things. I don't know why. Sad. So let me throw a link in the chat room there for y'all. There's some thylacine stuff for you guys. We'll keep an eye out. If 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, they're going to release something. Maybe the first one didn't go over well. I don't know. Now they're just throwing this other one out there. We'll keep an eye on that as time goes by. So UFO news, a couple of interesting stories. I don't normally do too many UFO stories. A lot of them are really, really hard to really convince yourself that they're real. But this one is interesting. This one here is interesting. A man in Exmouth, England, claims to have seen a pair of triangular-shaped UFOs back on Monday, September 12th at 10:30 p.m. local time. He then stated that a helicopter showed up and began chasing the unidentified flying objects. It's always interesting when you can tie something terrestrial or something man-made to these odd sightings. Now, the other part of that is if you could have multiple witnesses. Now, the man who asked to be, he asked to be remain anonymous stated, quote, "The two of them were bouncing around, and then the helicopter turned up and seemed to try and chase them through the sky. They bounced one way and then the other, and then headed back in land, not toward the sea. They went off pretty quickly, not supersonic or anything, but faster than a plane," unquote. The man also said that the helicopter could not keep up, and he saw it continue northeast along the coast. He did not have his phone or camera on him at the time, and the events happened so quickly he didn't have time to get those to actually take a photograph. And I get that. People always say, well, it's got to be fake. The sighting can't be real because everybody now has a camera on them all the time. Yeah, we do, but it's not always easy to tell you. If I'm watching something, I'm observing. I'm not going anywhere unless I know something is hanging in the sky. But even then, I'm going to observe. I'm going to watch what's going on and try to determine what is going on or what I'm looking at before running out and trying to record something. To me, that's your witness statement is more important than some kind of grainy photograph. We don't always see things either. A quick story about, again, referring back to my trip to Alaska. We were in Ketchikan on a little boat tour, seeing bald eagles and lighthouses and just different things. Pretty local in the Inside Passage there. And I was taking pictures of a boat. Pretty cool boat. It's got these little things hanging off the side. It's just a nice little fishing boat. And it was nice. Now, about a half hour later, they were talking about somebody had seen a submarine. And I looked around and I saw it. We were pretty far away at the time, probably about a mile away. And I focused my camera and was able to get a photograph of the submarine as it was above water. Well, not all the way above water, but, you know, most of it, about a quarter, good chunk of it was above water. You could tell that it was definitely a submarine. So I get home and looking at my photographs, just kind of going through everything. And lo and behold, one of the pictures of the boat in the background off to the left, you can see the submarine coming through the water, coming up, the little thing where the periscope comes off, the little top piece thing. You could see that through the water. I was like, whoa, I didn't see that. I was focusing on this boat and did not see this giant submarine coming out of the water. It's kind of scary. So you don't always see everything you take pictures of. And you don't always have time to focus on that. If you're focusing on one thing, sometimes you miss something else. So if you do see something strange, don't go running into the house and try to grab your camera. Now, if you have binoculars, that's a different story because that can help you visualize things. But just watch, pay attention, try to find a logical solution to them. That's my tip for that. Now, after the report hit the news, a lot of other people came forward stating that they too saw not only the helicopter, but the UFOs, which really makes the story a lot more interesting. Now, if it wasn't for that, I probably would not even talk about it. It's just another UFO report that really we have no legs to stand on. However, some stated that they thought the helicopter was looking for a person or looking for a drone with lights, or potentially a couple of people mentioned this, that they thought that there was a laser attached to a drone, and that's what they were looking for because there was this weird light bouncing off of this object. But again, it's always interesting to have multiple witnesses to any event like this. Many times it does speed up the process of discovering a logical solution. But then again, sometimes when you have these sightings and you can't find a logical solution, it really makes it even more mysterious, which this one is here, because I've not heard of a logical solution to this one. So it does remain unsolved. Now, Exmouth is located in southern England, along the English Channel. And something that I got an email today about, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it. MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, sent out an email to all the members today about some upcoming changes. I think it was today. Maybe it was yesterday. I don't know. I'm still catching up on all my emails. Now, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, has become a powerhouse of case reports of UFO sightings here in the United States. But they've kind of struggled in other countries. And if you've listened to the show, you know I do every month. I talk about the MUFON sightings statistics. And the United States usually gets a large chunk. I mean, granted, it's based here in the United States, but other countries, very minimal case reports turned in. And MUFON has recognized this. Now, there was also the debacle last year with the fundraising effort for a new case management system and a website that failed to generate enough funds. It was pretty much a horrible campaign to try to raise money to move forward. It was kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. Now, MUFON Executive Director Jan C. Harzan recently had a meeting with top people in MUFON, as well as some major benefactors who have a financial investment in MUFON. Now, the group held a two-day meeting looking at what MUFON needed to do to move forward in order to get more membership, which, you know, it is about money. And if you do get membership, that does help drive a lot of these things and can solve a lot of their problems. Now, MUFON is looking to grow their membership to 10,000 members in the next year. To do so, they've hired Eisen Agency, a professional public relations and marketing firm, to help improve their image and get the message out about the goals with the organization. Now, this is the first time in the history of the organization that they've sought outside help to help mold their image and get their message out there. So with this, MUFON will eventually launch a newly designed and mobile-friendly website. Now, they do have an app, but the app is really not all that great, to be honest, either. They're also going to have a new logo, which is kind of cool, all in the attempt to gain more membership. So I'm excited to see MUFON move forward and realize that they've been making some mistakes, and they're trying to improve their image and trying to get the message out there and trying to get more people involved. And they're also looking to kind of get a little bit more global as well, which is I'm excited about that. I think that's great, and I look forward to MUFON evolving. And this hopefully will prove positive for the organization. Now, for more information on MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and find out how you can become a member. I'm a member. I've been a member since, I think, 2002 or something. As well as, hey, why not be a potential field investigator like Audrey Hamilton, who is in the chat room, who provides us with the monthly sighting statistics. Go to MUFON.com, MUFON.com, and check him out. Yeah, there you go. I'm not being paid to say that. That's a good organization, and I really enjoy how they've approached the UFO thing with trying to keep all these cases together and get cases from all over the place and provide a way for people to sift through that information to find data. So, other news. Every now and again, you see a strange humanoid creature video pop up on the internet. Mostly, they're computer generated. They're fake. They're fairly easy to spot as fakes. However, there is one that was published on August 30th on YouTube of a closed circuit video of a gas station in Peru where a strange bluish metallic creature moves along a wall toward a street. Kind of creepy because these guys are standing there, two workers. They're standing around the gas pumps. Now, one of them notices the object. They're kind of facing each other, just kind of hanging out, doing nothing. And one of them cautiously approaches it. You can see them talking, and then the one guy starts walking toward it. Now, after getting fairly close to the object, the man slowly retreated away from the object, and then the object seemed to float. It's creepy. And now another, and it looked like it had legs too, the way it was moving, which is really weird. Now another view of a different camera shows the two men chasing the object toward the street. Now this video was uploaded by Dr. Anthony Choi, who is the national coordinator of the Peruvian Association of Ufology. And it was shot on August 22nd of this year and has so far received just over 1.8 million views. 1.8 million views Wow. Even stranger is that there were plenty of other witnesses to this purported humanoid creature. And there's other videos as well. Now, that really makes it interesting. Another video showed a person following the object as it seems to float across the highway. Now, this highway is near Lima, Peru. Is it Lima? Lima, Peru. A local television show, Hola a Todos, which essentially translates to Hello, Everyone, did a 9-minute segment on their show about the sighting, where they visited the locations of the videos and talked with a few of the witnesses. Let me throw this in the chat room so you can kind of get an idea of what the heck I'm talking about. There's a gas station Lima. I got it. The gas station there, you see the two guys and this little object. It's creepy. It's just weird. If you watch it, it's mind-boggling. Now, yeah, there was multiple witnesses, like I said, a couple of videos. Most of it came through this closed-circuit television camera. Now, this 90-minute segment, this television guy, now it's all in Spanish. I don't understand all of it. I got a lot of chunks of information, but some of it's a little hard to understand, even for me, that I do speak a little bit of Spanish, but not enough to really understand the complete context of what's going on. I have an idea what they're talking about. He's basically asking people what they saw and about this object. And he does go to all these locations that this was seen. Does go to the freeway, does go to the gas station. And they cross the busy freeway right there. It's the main highway, basically the highway on that side of South America. That's it. There's like one that goes north and south. So it's like a 4-lane freeway. It's pretty busy. Peru is not really the most populous area. Lima does have a lot of people kind of crammed in that area, but this is just outside of Lima. Now, he did cross the freeway with the cameraman and pretty much easily solved this mystery. A lot of people are arguing back and forth, especially on the YouTube video site. And a lot of paranormal-related websites have picked up this story and have made their own conclusions that this is a humanoid, a walking humanoid creature, some kind of robot. I've heard a lot of crazy stuff, but when I first saw it, it reminded me of a balloon. And a lot of people on YouTube, like I said, 1.8 million views. And of those 1.8 million views, there's about 900,000 people that think this is definitive proof of alien life. And this is a creature, maybe a robot, something alien or something strange or some kind of creature, a government project, whatever. The other 900,000 people are saying balloon. So it's kind of split. I don't want to say it's exactly 50-50, but it's pretty funny to read the comments and how some people are just so swept up in believing this. And other people are like, dude, it's a balloon. Well, this newscaster here on Hola a Todos, he crossed the freeway and he found in the bushes a metallic helium balloon that was shaped like a helicopter. Yeah. It was shaped like a helicopter. Now, the bottom part of it was floating sideways. So that it looked like the blades were there on the right and it was facing up and down. So the bottom with a little tail thing, you could tell it was already creased and it was creased pretty much in the same spot. As if you look in the video, it looks like the leg is moving. Well, it was kind of creased in that same spot. So more than likely, that's the solution. Now, whether they planted that or not, who knows? But it does look awfully close to what's in that video. The multiple videos. So I would say mystery solved. Mystery solved. It was a deflated balloon. And speaking of deflated, what a way to end that story. Kind of deflated story. Well, anyway, book of the week this week. I missed a pretty big event while I was on vacation. Coming home on Saturday was the Mothman Festival that I missed. Everybody that I know was there. Everybody I know but a lot of people I know in the paranormal world were down there at Point Pleasant, West Virginia, enjoying it. I wasn't there. I could have gone down there Sunday, but a little tired, a little jet lagged, and I had to work on Monday morning. So I didn't go. Really wanted to go. Kind of kicking myself for it. But it was a good time. I saw a lot of pictures. A lot of people had fun. They rubbed it in. Thanks, guys. But I kind of already planned this and read this book before I went. I read another book and a half. I bought another book while I was on vacation. And that one's about Alaska and the Yukon. So that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. Whenever I get around to reading that, I have a whole, gosh, 10 books I'm trying to get through to read to talk about here on the show. But this week's book of the week obviously has to do with the Mothman. It's the Mothman book, The Mothman Prophecies by John Keel. The book. And this is the book about Mothman. I mean, there is no other book that captures Mothman like this, like John Keel's book. And this book came out back in 1975, I believe. Let's see. I got some cheater notes here. 1975. It was re-released 1991. Now, there was a movie of the same name, The Mothman Prophecies, that came out in 2002, starring Richard Gere. A lot of rumors about Richard Gere at that time. Anyway, Richard Gere, The Mothman Prophecies, the movie, if you've seen it, it's not the book. Nothing like the book. It's the book is, it's kind of hard to explain. There's just so much to it. Buy it. It's very interesting. It's very dynamic, and it does talk about a lot of the things that are in the movie. But when you read the book, don't think of the movie. Just think of the Mothman and read through this. It kind of jumps around a lot. But there's so much other information other than just Mothman. John Keel, in case you don't know who he is, he passed away in 2009, but he was a very good journalist and an extremely good researcher, and he was also a ufologist. Now, he was credited with creating the term Men in Black. Might not have known that, but there's a lot of that in the book as well. A lot of ufology, a lot of seems like he was kind of angry or cranky about UFOs when you read through this book. But a lot of great information, not only about what was going on there in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, but about a lot of other topics, interestingly enough. A lot of UFO stuff in here, but a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of great documented conversations, documented events that happened that are far stranger. Now, if you've seen the movie is weird. The movie is strange. It's a little spooky. The book, probably about 10 times creepier than the movie. It's kind of like Jurassic Park. They kind of screwed that up too in the book adaptation. But this book is by far, if you're into the Mothman, you're into anything paranormal, it's almost reads like fiction, but it's not. It's factual. It's what happened. It says right on the front cover, a true story. And it is a New York Times best-selling book, The Mothman Prophecies, a true story. And sadly, obviously, it culminates with the Silver Bridge collapse in December of 1967. So it does cover, I think it was about 13 months. So it was about November of 1966, all the way through December of 1967, those strange events that happened down there in Point Pleasant. It's a decent-sized book, and the link I showed is to kind of a – it's a little bit larger of a book. I don't want to say large, but it's bigger than your normal – like a little handheld paperback book. Now, if you do go on Amazon and search, there is a cheaper, a smaller copy, one of the little 6x9 books, or not 6x9, so smaller, you know, those little romance novel size books. Not that I read those. I don't read those. But you can get a hold of one of those. They're a lot cheaper. But I like this book because it's a lot bigger. And it's nice. It's a great read. It's 300 pages. And it's it is a great read on cryptozoology, the Mothman, all the events that happened back there in 1967. So that's it. That's your show for the week. Thank you for coming back. And from my week off, I appreciate you coming back and listening to the show. Hopefully you learned something along the way, because that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm here for, to cut through the proverbial crud and bring you the reality behind all these stories. And, It's quality over quantity. I could sit here and tell you about 30 different stories, but I wouldn't have time to really dig down and tell you how I feel about it or what kind of information I've gathered from it. So that's what I do here each and every week here on the Paranormal News Insider. Big thanks again to Cindy producer extraordinaire for all her work she does behind the scenes. You guys have no idea. It's a lot of work to do one of these things. It's not as easy as just sitting here jibber-jabbering and slobbering all over a microphone. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And of course, Dita, the chat room chaperone for keeping everyone in line. And everybody else tuning in wherever you're at. If you're listening live, you're listening on a podcast, recorded session, I appreciate it either way. And as always, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, as you know, each and every week, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.